guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
A first and goal to go. Snap coming up from the 10. Ben takes the snap, backs up, looks to the right with a pump, throws to the end zone, caught by James. Touchdown, Pittsburgh. Jeez. The Steelers have gone in front.
I mean, what a play call again. You pump it right. They full well know they're going to throw it to the tight end. It's the oblique middle screen to the tight end. Schuster runs, walls off Daron Harmon, and allows James to clear it.
Tony Corrente.
Previous play. We'll go under review.
He brought it down, but as he dived across the goal line, the ball came out.
This is like the Dez Bryant
Green Bay Packer game. So they've got to decide whether he made the catch. Watch the ball bobble right there. Both hands are on the football. Did he complete the catch all the way to the ground and through?
After reviewing the play, the receiver in the end zone did not survive the ground. It's an incomplete pass.
This is unbelievable.
It'll be Pittsburgh's ball. Second down and 10 at the 10-yard line. The game clock is correct, and we'll start on the next snap.
Back to the phones here as promised. Let's grab Jack and Winthrop on the Pats. Hi, Jack.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. What do you got?
I really think that we're witnessing the demise of the Patriots right now, and I think it's because Bill Belichick his head's got... And you guys do a pretty good job of given equal blame to Brady and Belichick for kind of what's going on right now. But if Brady left after this year, I wouldn't blame him because I think people are just done. They're done with the hardline Bill Belichick way.
Okay, but I don't blame Bill Belichick. Your phone keeps going out. I don't blame Bill Belichick for that. That's been Bill Belichick. And, you know, has he gotten egomaniacal as well as it's gone on, as was raised yesterday? I think that's fair. You know, does he bench Malcolm Butler 10 years ago, 15 years ago? You know, I doubt it. Does he bench Malcolm Butler like that in Super Bowl 36, the first one against the Rams? No effing way. He needs to do everything he possibly can to win that game. And now, so again, I'm not telling Bill's exactly the same. But I think Bill's more like the guy he was when he first entered than Brady. And if anyone's changed, it's Brady. Does Brady not like be treated like everybody else now? Or he wants special treatment? Or he's got some diva instincts? That's on Brady, not Bill.
I mean, let's go just by the contract. He's always worked with them on the contract. Always. Why not now? Why hasn't Brady redone the deal? Like, it seems to me that he's getting to the point where he's like, I'm not doing any favors anymore. That's a change of behavior.
So, but that one I sort of get. The one that I don't, which, I like, eventually Tom's allowed to fight for his money. Like,
right, I'm just using it as a symptom, though.
So that one I'm not going to begrudge him. The nonsense about the Fakakta trainer, like, come on, Tom. Like, that feels like you're looking for special treatment. You know, you're looking for special considerations that other players don't get, and it's caused a big stink. Because what, the other guy can't rub you down, would you please? Like, that's the one that I look at as an example of Brady changing. And yes, are the players getting tired of Belichick? Maybe, but I put that on the players, not Bill. Jay in Connecticut, on Ryan Donato last night. What'd you think, Jay?
Well, you guys have been touching on a couple of things. Number one, Crosby is a flop. He is the biggest crybaby in the NHL, and if he gets anywhere near Char, he runs to the referees. And two, I don't know if you guys were, if you guys haven't touched on it, but you were talking about the feel of Donato's goal coming through the TV. Did you guys hear the fans in Tampa the other night, Saturday night?
Yeah, the Bruins fans are starting to show up on the road, too. Like, big time. No, as I mentioned earlier, like the Bruins, I thought the Bruins were going into a period here where it was going to be, oof, it's going to be tough for us hockey people. Celtics really emerging, championship threat, really taking control of the heartbeat of the city, and the Bruins thing sort of on this slow slog.
Mid-2000s again.
Slow slog, you don't know where they're going. You don't know where they're going and when they're going to get there. And, boy, in 3 months, it's like they're right back.
It went the other way.
It's great.
It did. It totally went the other way. That's the thing. And look, you knew that they were at a pivotal stage there for Sweeney's future, if nothing else. That those young guys had to start to see it.
Does Crosby get the call last night in overtime? He probably does. But Crosby is not the flopper that Marchand is. He's as cheap as Marchand. He's dirty. He's a total crybaby. I agree with you on that. Oh, he's a total crybaby. Marchand's already been fined for embellishment, which means that's his second strike. It might be his third. I think the first is a warning, second's a fine, third's a suspense, something like this. So he's already been rung up a couple times, and that's just this year. He's got a long history of embellishment. The players that embellish, I don't shed a tear when they don't get a call. I don't. What goes around comes around.
I'm glad they didn't call it. I want to see that 3-on-3. I want to see someone score a real goal. I love that.
Brendan in Foxborough on the Bees. Hi, Brendan.
Mike, do you believe in matchups?
Sometimes, yes.
Okay, so would you agree that Boston is in Tampa's head? Because I don't know. Did you see the quotes that Tampa said after the game with playing Boston? How they were frustrated, grabbing their sticks. Tuke is in our head. The same thing could be said for about Toronto. And this is why I agree with Maz. Whoever wins Toronto or Boston is coming out of the East. They're a wagon, Toronto. They had their best player hasn't played in the last 10 games. So that's going to be the toughest series. And I think if Boston get by them...
Hey, Brendan.
Yes.
Who's Toronto's number one D?
Morgan Rielly.
Okay. Stack up the Bruins D versus the Toronto D.
You have Morgan Rielly. You have Zaitsev. You have Jake Gardner. You have Ron Hainsey.
Okay. Their D sucks. Their D's not good.
Their D sucks. I would agree. But they put. Remember last year? They played Washington last year. And they went. And Washington beat them three times in overtime to win that series.
Brendan,
you know, they still won.
Toronto's good. Toronto's good. I'm just telling you.
I fear them. I fear they remind me of the Canadians when Bruins in the 0-11 Cup run. They do not match up well with them because of their speed, top to bottom. Guys, they have guys that fly.
Okay, you might be right. You might be right. If I'm looking at the Bruins and I'm saying, look, if you think the Bruins are a legit Stanley Cup team, you shouldn't fear any matchup. But if you're being realistic and you want to avoid certain teams over the others, there's really only a couple that I would want to avoid. All right? I want no piece of Washington because I just think that...
It's a brutal matchup.
That for some reason, the Bruins just can't get there. And I know that Grubauer or whatever his name is supplanted Holtby. I don't care who the starters. If you're the Washington Capitals and you face the Bruins, isn't Holtby your goalie?
You own them.
Okay, so, but either way, the Bruins, just look at the Bruins' track record against the Capitals the last three or four. I don't think they've won in 4 years against that team or something like that. So the Capitals, if I could avoid, I'd root against facing the Capitals. I would root against who's ever playing Tampa in the first round, right? If you get Toronto and Tampa is playing New Jersey, go New Jersey because I'd rather have New Jersey in the second round. But other than that, I like the way you match up against Pittsburgh. I do. And I'll take my chances against everyone else, including Toronto, because if you're a Stanley Cup team, you can't be afraid of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Okay, so all I'm telling you, though, is using your same logic, I think, what's Toronto beating them, 7 out of 8? Didn't they sweep them last year and they took 3 out of 4 this year?
Last year is a million years ago. It's a totally different team here. And they won 3 or 4 this year, but as you said, the first two...
were early in the year.
Were back-to-back before Cassidy benched Rask, if I believe.
Yeah, they were very early in the year.
It was before... The Bruins season started when Cassidy benched Rask.
Yep.
It started there. So those Toronto games were before that. So, I don't know. Toronto should scare me more than they do.
And then after the Bruins get their act together, they did play Toronto, and I want to say it was like late January. You know, they beat them 4-1.
And I'm telling you,
they did. They handled them pretty well.
But the reason I bring up the D is because I think Toronto they are not a complete team.
No, they're vulnerable there.
They're not good on D.
I mean, look, that's part of the reason they went and got Plekanec, right? Because they couldn't reinforce the D core, so they wanted a forward who could help them there.
Dan and Quincy, what do you got?
You know, I always wanted to say this every time I called your show, but I kept forgetting that. Malcolm Butler struck me as a guy after he made the play in Seattle as this aw shucks, don't tell Red I would have played for nothing kind of guy. Uh-huh. And then you guys get into the mix and you're the instigators. Like the Goodfella scene when Robert De Niro said, "Are you gonna take that crap from Spider?" And then he shot him dead. You know, it's the same thing. Why Felger and Maz do you always take the side of the players in contract negotiations? Why?
Well, this one I do. This one I do.
Why? But you guys were incensed that Bill Belichick would let Darrell Revis go for this guy. You laughed at that move. And
yes.
Now you want to pay him the king's ransom.
No, that's not what he said, Danny. That's not what he said. Hold on, that's not what Mike was talking about earlier in the show.
Well, let him talk for himself.
Bill might have gotten the contract right. What I'm saying is the commentary about Butler's agent, blaming Butler's agent for not taking that team deal, turned out to be 1,000% wrong. Butler's agent did well for him. He got his money.
I understand that, but Butler had not yet proven himself in the NFL
yet. That's fine.
Okay, so let me ask you
this. He got his money, Danny. He got his money. The agent was right. The agent was not wrong. The agent did not do his client a disservice. The agent got him his money. That's my only point. Bill might have gotten the contract thing right on.
Murray asked me a question last week. Why do I always take Belichick's side? Because I firmly believe in the NFL. Okay, here's the list of things you got to deal with. Attrition rate, the number one challenge a coach has to face. Attrition rate, the NFL parity mandate, fighting free agency, and you have to manage during the season. You've got to still build the team because players go down like flies, and you've got to build the team.
Okay, so what's your point, Dan?
My point is Bill Belichick's way is the best way of doing it.
It probably is.
Okay, but every time I make that statement, you guys come back, and Gasper's part of this too, with the only reason why the Patriots are allowed to do it every year is because of Tom Brady.
True.
Okay, you're a Packers fan, right?
I don't believe that, by the way, Danny. I don't believe it either.
It's a bunch of crock, because I can give you evidence contrary, but I won't waste my airtime. You're a Packers fan, Felger. Do you wish the Packers did business the way Belichick does?
Yes.
Okay, then, why do you rail on the Patriots for doing what you would want the Packers to do?
Because it's the backbone of sports talk radio. It's second-guessing the GM, Dan.
You've got to, if it is the quarterback, and it's all about the quarterback, you got Aaron Rodgers. How come they don't go back there every year and face the Patriots? It should be the Packers or the Patriots
every year. It should
be.
I agree.
Okay, tell that to your partner sitting next to you.
Okay, partner, that's if you had given Aaron Rodgers Bill Belichick, would Aaron Rodgers have everything Tom Brady has today? Maybe.
Close, yeah.
Maybe. I won't say everything, but Rodgers would have won 3, maybe not 5.
Okay, can you manage it the same way if you don't have Brady? That's my point.
If you have another great quarterback, you can.
Okay, but again, so now but if you don't have a great quarterback, can you do it the way Belichick
probably
does it?
Probably not.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying. So I'm saying they can do it because they have Brady. Fine, take Brady's name out of it. They have a great quarterback who took less, played ball with him, and was clutch. Fine.
But that doesn't mean... Other coaches have had these great quarterbacks that have not stacked up with Belichick's success.
Okay, but can you manage the roster the same way without that quarterback?
No.
See, that's my only point.
No one's saying Bill's way is the wrong way, but he doesn't get everyone right. And we have these debates about these players, and usually Bill's right and we're wrong. So, and that all comes out of it as well. But when he makes a move, you have the right to debate and second guess whether that was the right move or not, Danny. I mean, what? We're supposed to, of all people, you don't like second guessing a coach or a GM? Of all people, we're not allowed to do that.
I don't know what Danny's problem is.
Would you give me a break already on that?
Felger and Mez. The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mez.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Mez on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Steve in North Attleboro on the Bees. Hi, Steve.
Thanks for making me. Thanks, long time listener. You guys are the best sports show, not even close. First off, I'm a diehard Penguins fan. I'm not a big Crosby fan, but. The Bruins want a great track. When you win back-to-back cups, you're going to get the calls. I'm a Malkin type guy. The Bruins are in the right thing. When Raskin keep his goals against average probably in April, never mind May, under 5, they got a shot.
What's your confidence level on Tuukka Rask in the playoffs? 1 to 10.
6.5.
Yeah, that's a fair number.
Ooh.
6.5.
That's low, and you're going to win the cup when you feel about it.
No. But now ask me.
You're going to win the cup? You think they have a legit chance, Murray, and you feel like you feel a 6.5 on your goalie?
You said confidence level.
Yeah, confidence level.
What could he play at?
Oh, his ceiling's a 9.
I was going to say like 8, 8.5.
Yeah, I think the ceiling's like an 8.
Oh, really? Yeah. So you think they're winning the cup without the goaltending?
Yes, because I think that they're that deep. The defense is good. They got this good mix of youth and veterans. Like they're picking guys off the street, like Donato, who comes in and immediately contributes, like last night. I'm not that worried about it, even if Rask is a bit of a liability.
See, I still have my doubts with Rask because every once in a while he goes through these periods where he gives up goals. And, oof. Like, just up until that 3-0 Tampa game, they had a stretch of games there where you watch him and you say, well, that was short side. That's over his glove like always. He's not seeing the net right now. Like, you got to get him in the right groove because there were times where he just looks ordinary.
Andrew in Stoughton. Hi, Andrew.
Going.
It's going.
I thought the way the Bruins played against the Lightning the other day was dominant. I don't think there's a team in the NHL that can beat them after that performance. If they can do that again... time in and time out, I think they'll be able to win the cup. Just want to hear what you guys have to think. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, if they play the way they've played for the balance of this year, they have every right to expect them to be right there.
They can make a run at it.
Yes, if they play the way they've played. I think that's just a big if. It's one thing to say Pittsburgh or Chicago when they were on their run, or the Kings when they were on their run, or maybe even Nashville this year. Like, teams that have had good regular seasons and then gone deep, and now they're back at it. You can say, okay, there's no if. This is what they are. Is there any part of you that still has to see it in the postseason for the Bruins? Shouldn't it be?
Yes, there's no track record with a lot of these guys. There's no track record, really. Even with McAvoy, God, I love him. But, he did it, what, for 3 games last year? Carlo, You know, Krug had has more of a run than the rest of them, but I worry about him in the defensive zone. Can he hold up through a whole postseason, like whacking people around? I don't know, and let alone the forwards when you get right down to those guys. Heinen, like DeBrusque, can these guys do it in the postseason?
I'm just looking at Rask's numbers over the last 10 games. You know he's given up 4 goals or more 6 times?
Yeah, there's a bunch of them in there, Murray. And I'm telling you, it go up before that, right before that Tampa game. They were giving up a ton of goals.
Mike, what's your line of demarcation with the save percentage?
So save percentage, if you're below 900, you blow.
Yeah, 886 right now over these
last
10 games.
That sucks. No, that's not even average. That sucks. That sucks.
See, now in the Tampa game, I thought even though the number of shots was low, I think Tampa got credited with 23 shots on goal. Rask made some big stops, I thought, in that game. So I'll take the Rask in that game. And but when he's off, he's off. He leaves big holes in the net.
Last night is more of a thing that worries me with Rask. In that, they gave up 5. I can't blame them for at least 3 of them. Probably 4 of them. Right? Again, if you watch the game.
Three.
The first goal was off a guy's shin pad. The second goal was the slap pass to the top of the crease that Plastic Man couldn't have saved. The third goal was the sickest tip you will ever see from Thomas Vanek in the high slot.
Unbelievable goal.
With unbelievable, like highlight. Well, I don't know how he did what he did, but that was an unstoppable piece of filth. There was a fourth goal off a faceoff.
Right, which is absolute snipe.
I don't know how you save that. And then if you want to say the fifth in overtime, where it's 3-on-3 and the guy's right on top. So it's like, I can't really blame him for any of the goals. Yet, he gave up 5 and the other guy was better. Like, I feel like that happens with me and Rask a lot in the postseason. I don't blame you, but the other guy was better. And there were 4 or 5 on the board at the end of the night. Like, that's the one that worries me about Rask. And I don't know. So, I mean, I don't know what to do about that until we see what he does. We've got Scott in Weymouth on replay. Go ahead, Scott.
What's up, Falcon Mavs? Nice to speak with you. Give me 3 seconds. Literally 3 seconds, please. All right, here we go. What's up? You there?
Yes.
What's up? All right, here we go. Goalie interference in hockey. Getting out of control. It is ridiculous. Much like the letter of the law, you know, there's a fine line between murder and manslaughter. It's intent, and I can't stand to watch it anymore. Goals being called back. Moving on, I got 3 quick points, please, Felger.
Quick.
Yes, Minnesota Wild are your Stanley Cup champion.
Okay, good.
Connor McDavid is the best player since Mario Lemieux.
Okay, babe.
And what happened to rivalries in hockey? There's no such thing. Where'd it go? Ever since the old garden went down, so did hockey.
Yeah, it's not that. It's fighting. Fighting's gone, so rivalries are gone. They all wear the shields. There's no fighters. It's different. It's just, it's different. It's a different league. And if you don't like, if you need the fighting, then the league's not for you. I don't know how you haven't been entertained by the Bruins this season. Like, last night was an entertaining game.
They've played a lot of games, like that Pittsburgh game, that 8-4 Pittsburgh game, the Tampa game.
But just last night, the passing, the skill, the scoring chances, that was a fabulous game. It's just not what it used to be, and if you need the rough stuff, then it's just not for you. All right, we have Murray's update here, in which you will hear the Red Sox opening day starter. They have decided who their opening day starter is. Who is it? Who should it be? Do you know, Maz?
I do know, yeah.
Okay, so you're not going to spoil it, but who do you think, fans? Who do you think it is? Who do you think it should be?
Stay tuned for more Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Could be as early as, you know, sometime in this trip, but I'm not going to put a timeline on it. It's all about how he feels. It's about when he and the trainers feel great about him coming back. And as the coach, you just wait for the report that says can play or can't play.
That was Brad Stevens on earlier with Beadle and Zoe. And they're talking about Kyrie Irving and his return. And when Brad Stevens says it could be as early as sometime this trip, I think people were encouraged. Like, oh, he could be working his way back, could be back here at any time.
As was I.
Which still could be the case, or could it not, Maz? What are you hearing?
Okay, so look, Jimmy Stewart, our producer, and Murray, you know, Big Jim Worry, have said all along they're worried about Kyrie's knee, and I've sat here and I've told you, don't worry about it. He's fine. It's maintenance. It's fine. Look at the time of the year they are. There's nothing to gain from him playing. And now, based on what I'm hearing, I'm going to tell you they might be right. Jimmy and Jimmy might be right. Okay? And so
Legit cause for concern.
There is legit cause for concern. And here's what I'll tell you. My understanding is on Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving has screws in his left knee that go back to the injury he had in the NBA Finals in 2015 when he broke his kneecap. And I believe at the time there was also a rupture of the patella tendon, but whatever. He broke his kneecap. In the surgery to repair it, they had to insert screws. Irving himself has talked about this in the past, saying, you know, you have screws in your knee, or I have screws in my knee, and it flares up, it gets hurt, and it hurts like hell. Those screws are still in there. And when Irving has said that he has considered having surgery in the past to go back in on his knee because they have to go back in there, my understanding, again, is that those screws have to come out. Because the longer they're in there, and as long as they're in there, they can cause some irritation and some inflammation and some pain. And I think that that is what he has been combating. Okay, these screws are causing pain, discomfort, inflammation in his knee. The screws have to come out. And it feels like now he's got to the point where he wants to go see someone else, see a second doctor, get a second opinion, perhaps in the next day or two from what I'm told, and get an idea as to whether they have to do this sooner or later.
If the screws have to come out, what does that mean?
If the screws have to come out immediately, he's pretty much done for the year. He's not going to be able to play again. So not this year. So they'd have, this is the dilemma I think they're weighing there, is that this thing keeps flaring up. It causes them some pain. They don't want to take the screws out because they want them to be able to play through it. So the playoffs are coming up. It wouldn't surprise me in the least bit at this stage if you don't see him for the rest of the regular season. Like, I'm starting to wonder about that.
Because they want him to play through the inflammation and play through the...
They want to manage it.
They want to play through the pain of the screws, because if you do what they're going to have to do ultimately, which is take the screws out,
they're going to have to shut him down.
He's gone for months and months, and that could mean the whole end of the year.
Or at least weeks and weeks. And I, from what I understand, too, and again, you know, I don't have a medical degree, but I ask questions, that the procedure in and of itself to take those screws out is not a big deal. That's not a huge thing. But in doing so, they're going to render him immobile or, in, you know, useless, borderline, for a period of time that would wipe him out for a good chunk, you know, a few months or whatever it is. And so this is where they are right now. And Kyrie, they're going to get a second look at it from what I understand. So to me, I am now more alarmed than I was before. Like, I heard some of this today and I went, oop, that's not good. So now if you're asking me my guess, they're going to, he wants to play. I can't imagine that he doesn't want to play. And of course they want him to play. But if it is at a point where it's no longer manageable, they got to go in and get those screws out. So, look, I'm not at the Garden tonight. If I were, I know what the questions that I'd be asking are concerning Kyrie. It just feels like, I don't know, they're starting to go on a little bit of time now. Like, it, usually when he misses a game, they give him a game or two and he comes back. It's now been how many?
This is the fourth game that he'll have missed.
Okay, and then Stevens was asked today, are you going to see him on the trip? I don't know.
Well, he said it could be as early as this trip, but...
Right. But again, there's no... All of a sudden, it's very vague, or more vague than it has been. And I'm telling you, I think it's because they're trying to assess how to proceed on this thing, and they're going to have a second person take a look at it, because, again, it's a problem. It's a problem.
Is the second person... Is the current... do know him as... Is the current recommendation to get the screws out?
I don't know the answer to that.
And they're hoping that the second guy says, no, you don't need to take them out.
I don't know the answer to that.
Or is it just the reverse? Is Irving hearing right now, you don't need to take the screws out, you're fine, we can just sort of manage this in the short term, get them out later. And Kyrie wants to go to another doctor to hear exactly what should be done.
I don't know which course of action, the current... Yeah, like, I know exactly what you mean.
Where are they currently, and what are they looking for the second guy to say?
I don't know. I don't know what the first course of action is. My guess is the first one was don't get him out. Wait, see how it goes. You wouldn't be getting the second opinion if things were getting better, right? I mean, that again, I'm just giving you my gut on that one. Usually when you go see a second guy, it means you're having a problem and you can't fix it.
I mean, that pain is real, and that's why I've been concerned. And now I'm full on Big Jim worry after hearing that. But that pain is real because it wasn't Brad Stevens or any of the training staff that pulled him in that last game he played against the Pacers. He pulled himself. And he'd already missed that game against Chicago. Okay, a little bit of maintenance, that's what that was talked about then. He pulled himself. I'm sorry, that pain was real.
Well, so, and again, I was away last week, but that Pacers thing, that should be the red flag, because if they're just sort of, if it's just these maintenance day, you know, these the NBA thing at the end of the year.
Playing a bum team like Chicago, like we get it.
You know, no, but when you're resting all your guys and you're resting, you know, they don't make the trip, they don't play, they don't suit up, they don't play. pulling himself at halftime, coming out at halftime. So, you know, they had intended for him to play. The plan was never for him to play a half. That's not the way it works. You either, you know, mail it in and give him a rest and don't play, or you play.
Oh, I was there. And then, you know, 5 minutes into the third quarter, I was like, what's happening? And I checked Twitter and it's, he pulls himself because of this knee issue. Man, he hasn't. You haven't seen him since.
Okay, so that's what we know. That's what Maz knows. Just reset it again, Maz.
Okay, so just to give you an idea of how Kyrie deals with this, this is a comment from last April from him. Okay, last April, he said, I had a great chance to play at a high level today, and then after halftime, it just effing flared up, talking about his knee. And he has screws in that left knee, I'm pretty sure it's his left knee, from breaking it in the NBA Finals, breaking the kneecap in the NBA Finals in 2015. To repair that injury, they had to use wire and screws. Okay, I mean, they got to go tie that thing back together to be able to hold it together and heal. You know, it's a significant injury, and a patella is always a bad area to get hurt. And during the course of the year, from time to time, and even last year, it has flared up on him, and he can rest it and manage it. And it feels like now it has reached the point where it's not going away as quickly as they wanted to. He's going to get a second opinion, have someone look at that knee, and they have to make the assessment of whether or not to take out those screws, because those screws have to come out. Okay, they have to come out. Sooner or later, they got to come out.
And if they say they have to come out now, he could be done the rest of the year.
If the screws have to come out now and there's no way around that, I don't think he's going to be able to play the rest of the year.
Okay, so that's what we know. Add it to the list of things we can discuss.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mass.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Clock, and we'll bring it back with Terry in Westford on the Celtics. Go ahead, Terry.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the call. The new decision here about Kyrie is obviously something that's troublesome. But I'm going to be optimistic and say that let's plan on him just having it being an irritation and he's going to be back. So if that's our best-case scenario, right, and he can tolerate it through the playoffs, the other side of the coin is not having Marcus Smart back, who really is the grit of our defense at this point. And there's no one that can fill his shoes and do as much as he does for the Celtics. Your thoughts on that?
All right, what are we hearing on?
Back.
Yeah, what are we hearing on Marcus Smart?
So the what we heard last week with Smart was that it was going to be a couple of months. And, you know, somewhere in the middle of May is when he is going to be available to play again. Somewhere around there. That's a, you know.
So what is that, second round?
Yep. Or the end of the second, maybe even, depending.
Wow. Okay. You should be able to get by a round for sure without Marcus Smart.
Absolutely.
Probably two. I'm sorry, Maz, I do not take the Bullets as seriously as you do.
I mean, right now you'll get Miami in the first round.
Okay, so it's like Miami, the Bucks, one of those teams, you should beat them. That's a first round with or without Marcus Smart, please. If the second round's the Bullets, I still like you at home without Marcus Smart. You still should win that series.
Okay, so Washington to me is a tougher matchup than you think it is. And so I just think that you know, they, and I know it wasn't the same team. There's a lot of talent in that Washington starting lineup. There is. And you can say that they're not well coached, or they're knuckleheads, or they don't execute at the end of the game. All of that is well and good. They go on runs, as we saw last postseason, where they can absolutely blow you out of the gym. Without Smart, you know, once they get past the first round, if Smart's not there, I think it's open season.
Okay.
I do.
New catch rule. You no longer have to survive the ground. The ball can come loose when you hit the ground. So Dez Bryant's a catch. Jesse James is a catch. Calvin Bryant, that famous play at the, what's his first name? Calvin Bryant.
Yeah.
Yeah. That
Calvin play, Benjamin.
The Calvin Benjamin against the Patriots. Megatron.
Calvin Johnson.
Okay. Calvin Johnson, that play at the Bears is now okay. So the ball can move when it doesn't need to survive the ground. It can move a little, which I thought it could before, but they're saying that's a new rule. It can now move a little. And they've lowered the standard or heightened the standard in terms of what's going to be replayed. In other words, it now needs to be indisputable visual evidence to review it. The old standard was clear and obvious, which to me sounds exactly the same.
What's the difference?
But apparently they say it's going to have to be more obvious now on replay than it was previously, which I think is a recipe for disaster. I think all of this is a recipe for disaster. They should keep it just the way that it is.
Right. It's not a questionable call anymore. It's a debatable one.
Mike and Wilburn, your thoughts on the new catch rule.
Can I just say, Tony, welcome to Thunderdome for your overtime rules. I look forward to guys getting their arms hacked
sacked off. Like, we're talking about a league where Bergeron executed maybe if there was a Tom Amansky video for defensive hockey, that stick lift that Bergeron had about a month ago on a breakaway that he got called for a hook or some type of penalty on. The absurdity of the NHL stick fouls this year are ridiculous. And we're not calling not only the Bergeron penalty, which if that was Sidney Crosby, the National Guard would have been dispatched to Pittsburgh, but the Riley Nash one, which looked like the drill that my son does in youth hockey, where one kid pulls another kid down the rink by his coho. How both those calls were blown in overtime, I have no idea. And I'm just glad that you're preserving the sanctity of 3-on-3 hockey so we might be able to get to a shootout. I mean, it's just absurd. So just have the shootout, 5 minutes beforehand and get the whole thing done. Because if we're not going to call penalties, then what are we doing?
Well, usually they score on 3-on-3. That's what I'm telling you. You won't get to the shootout. I love the 3-on-3. I do. I'd like to see it in the playoffs.
Usually they score on 3-on-3 unless, the Bushwhackers tackle you on the way to the goal. The catch rule, I'm just glad that they are calling it like they did when they initiated the rule change in the third quarter of the Super Bowl, which is whatever we want the rule to be at the time is what the rule is. This basically stems from the Dean Blandino in the ear of every official decision in 2015. This is where the NFL hits a slippery slope that I want no part of. I think the catch rule should be possession for a second and 2 feet down, and that's it.
Okay, then you get a million fumbles. You have a million fumbles, and you don't beat Baltimore in that AFC Championship game at Foxborough because that Lee Evans play is a catch. Control 2 feet. And this whole thing about the way the Patriots teach it, about ripping the ball as you go to the ground and continue to fight at the ball and bat at the ball, that's all done. Catch 2 feet, that's it. Gonna be a lot of fumbles, a lot fewer catches. That's going to help the defense, not the offense. I don't think that's what the NFL wants. I'm not sure that's what you want. I like it the way that it is. Because, again, when people say, I don't know what a catch is, that's not true. I think it's been pretty clearly defined.
They don't like what a catch is.
They don't like what a catch is. Exactly. Exactly, Maz. You don't like the rule, but you know the rule. You have to catch it. You have to get both feet down. You have to make a football move. And if you go to the ground, you have to maintain complete control. And that doesn't matter if you are in the end zone or if you're spilling out of bounds into the cheerleaders. When you hit the ground, you've got to maintain control of the ball.
Okay, so again,
and
though,
so to me, it's very clear. I know what a catch is.
Okay.
Now, but that doesn't mean it's called correctly or that referees don't misinterpret it or they have the wrong call all the time. But I know what a catch is. Now I don't know.
Okay, but even so, I always feel like no matter how you word the rule, there's always going to be a gray area. For example, what constitutes not having control of the ball? Is it a little bit of movement or a lot of movement? You tell me. So, all I can tell you is this. At some point, somebody's got to make a judgment. Okay? Somebody's got to make a judgment at some point. And I used the Jesse James play because I think that was the most egregious example of it. He's sort of sliding to his left, catches the ball, goes down on his knee, and then reaches, and the ball moves a little in his hands when he touches the ground. Is that a touchdown? Should it be a touchdown? Because I think now, with the high-def replay and everything else, if you watch a guy hit the turf, you're going to see the ball move. And more than half the time.
I didn't need high-def on the Jesse James play.
Okay, so, but I league didn't leave that one out of it. I'm just saying in general, on any play, if you have high-def, the ball's going to move. So how much is losing control?
Basically, what they're saying in the new rule is, if you need replay to see the ball move a little, they're going to allow it. They're going to allow it. Slight movement of the ball, it looks like we'll reverse that, Vincent said Tuesday. When he says it means we'll reverse it, he doesn't mean we're going to reverse the call. We're going to reverse the way we've been calling it.
Right, reverse the rule, basically.
Slight movement of the ball, it looks like we'll reverse that. He says going to the ground, it looks like that's going to be eliminated. And we'll go back to the old replay standard of reverse the call on the field only when it's indisputable. He said the new catch rule will only require that a receiver have control of the football and any slight movement of the ball in the receiver's hands detected via replay review would not result in an incompletion. So again, the Clement touchdown against Philly would have stood because you could only see the ball moving when you got to replay. Which, in theory, I like because it's less replay. Let's see if they stick to it. Because I guarantee you, you're going to see the ball move on replay. The NFL is going to stick with the call on the field, and people are going to go, how come you didn't reverse it? You can see the ball move clearly.
Right. So this is the question now. Like, again, now you word it this way. My question is, well, what constitutes slight movement versus moderate or significant movement?
There's only two solutions. And that's keep it exactly the way that it is. You've got to maintain control of that ball till you get back to the bench and drink Gatorade. That's it. The bat ball moves at any point in time between the first time you touch it and the second you get back to the huddle, incomplete. Just make it so black and white or eliminate replay.
I mean, it really is. It's gotten crazy that they have to whittle it down to this detail. Because I just think there's a certain element of human error in this. And when I say human error, I'm talking about the actual catch. So the ball's going to hit your hands and stick and not move at all, ever? If you want to do that, then legalize stick 'em.
Michael Felger.